Sports Week in all. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. We're now 17 days away to the kickoff of the World Cup football tournament in Russia. And how about another fun World Cup fact for our Voice of America listeners? 17 was also the age of Brazilian great Pelé when he became the youngest player ever to score at the World Cup during the 1958 tournament in Sweden. Pelé found the net in the 66th minute in Gothenburg, Sweden, where Brazil beat Wales 1-0 in the quarterfinals. The Brazilians would go on to defeat host Sweden in that World Cup final, 5-2, the first of their record 5 World Cup trophies. Pelé would also lift the World Cup in 1962 and 1970, becoming the only player in history to win it 3 times. Now, Brazil is in Group E at next month's World Cup, along with Switzerland, Costa Rica, and Serbia. The Brazilians will play the Swiss June 17th in Rostov-on-Don, Russia, in the opening World Cup match for both teams. Meanwhile, World Cup-bound Nigeria is hosting the Democratic Republic of Congo this Monday evening in Port Harcourt in a friendly international warm-up match. Ogenyi Onazi is a midfielder for the Super Eagles of Nigeria. Before the game, reporter Iron Mike Mbonye asked him about the team's preparations.
By the special grace of God, we are positive about everything. Of course, anyone who is going to the World Cup, you need to have a target and an objective. If God gives us the grace to win the World Cup, then it's good for us. But we have high hopes that we're going to do well in the World Cup by the grace of God.
You're in Group V. The big names are there: Argentina, Croatia, Iceland. Any fears about that group?
Of course, the World Cup is not for child's play. You must expect big names and big teams, and you have to prepare towards that. And we want to respect them and want to do our job and make sure that we bring out our best.
And what is the mood in the camp now?
Everybody is here with a high spirit. Thank God we don't have any injury. The little injuries we have, they're already recovering, and the spirit is very high. Everybody is waiting and hoping that we start in a very high note.
This will be your second World Cup, I suppose. Yeah. What's the experience? What are you expecting, your expectations as you go to play in the second World Cup?
Of course, you learn from the first World Cup, and some of those things you couldn't do at the first World Cup, you have to put them now and make sure you make a difference. That's the most important thing.
That's Ogenyi Onazi, a midfielder for the World Cup-bound Super Eagles of Nigeria. And he was talking with reporter Iron Mike Mbonye in Uyo, the capital of Nigeria's Akwa Ibom state. The captain of the Super Eagles is John Obi Mikel.
I'm optimistic about this World Cup, about this team. I think we're going to do great things in Russia. We just have to continue playing the way we're playing and be humble, be disciplined like we've always been. No need to be to think that we are favorites. We're still underdogs, so we have to go in as underdogs in this World Cup, and hopefully we can get good results.
In terms of getting good results, John Obi Mikel says Nigeria's first World Cup match against Croatia on June 16th is crucial.
I mean, the first game is always very important, and for us it's going to be the same. We want to win the first game. It's important to win the first game. And if we do this, we put ourselves in a very good position, and also we want to go past the round of 16. This World Cup, we want to do well. We want to do better than ever. We want to go one step further. And it's important for us as players to know what we want to achieve.
Joining Captain John Obi Mikel at the news conference in Uyo was Nigeria's German manager, Gernot Rohr. He sized up Nigeria's World Cup Group D which also includes Iceland and two-time World Cup champion Argentina.
Don't forget that we have a very tough group. We are supposed to be fourth because we are coming for the fourth pot in the draw, so it will be a surprise to come out of this group for a lot of people, but perhaps not for me, because I believe in my team, and I think that my team, even if it's young, has enough of experience and complicity and enough of discipline also to do well and to come out of this group.
That's Gernot Rohr, the head coach of Nigeria's World Cup-bound Super Eagles, and he was speaking at a news conference in Uyo, Nigeria. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Joining us now with more African football news is reporter Samson Omale. Good evening, Samson.
Good evening to you, Sonny. We begin with Liverpool talisman and reigning CAF African Footballer of the Year, Egypt's Mohamed Salah, who has received a boost to his hopes of making next month's World Cup after the Egyptian FA claimed the injury picked up in his side's Champions League final loss to Real Madrid is merely a sprained shoulder. The Red Star was forced off the field through injury after just 30 minutes following a robust challenge from Real Madrid veteran Sergio Ramos, and initial reports suggested that Salah will miss next month's World Cup. However, the Egyptian FA are believed to be more optimistic over the injury, claiming that the damage is just a sprain which could be healed in just 2 weeks. His coach Jurgen Klopp differs with Egyptian FA when he told reporters after the UEFA Champions League loss on Saturday night that Mohamed Salah's injury could be serious after all.
There's something with the shoulder, obviously. So you can imagine he would have played on if anything is possible. So I didn't see him. I'm not sure, but maybe he's in the hospital for X-ray. That doesn't look good.
Staying with football news, the Liberian Football Association has announced that it will not support Morocco's 2026 FIFA World Cup bid. The Liberian FA is set to break ranks with Africa and vote against the North Africans when the decision on who will host the 2026 World Cup is held next month. Liberia Football Association President Musa Biliti said the decision came after talks with Liberian President and former World Footballer of the Year George Weah and the government of Liberia. Elsewhere, Danny Jordan, the chief organizer of the 2010 World Cup, was re-elected as president of the South African Football Association for a second term, despite allegations made by a singer that he raped her 25 years ago. Danny Jordan won the vote at the weekend with over 95% of the votes, Safa said, and with that victory, earned another five-year term. He was critical of the media, dispelling insinuations that his election may have been immersed in illegality, saying that FIFA observers attended Saturday's vote.
This process was thorough, and where people raise issues, we step back to say, we don't want a discredited election. Let's go back. On Friday, there was an attempt to stop this election. It was dismissed by the court, and the court said proceed. FIFA said proceed. What else do you want?
Former referee Ace Nkombo, who was to be Jordan's only challenger, withdrew, claiming threats to his life just as voting was about to begin.
I thought that by registering its illegality, they would then entertain and then discuss, and we convince ourselves that it is not right. On top of that, I received threats inside. There's a delegate that threatened to smash my face, so I don't feel safe. I have to leave.
I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Thanks, Samson. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Turning to athletics, British star Mo Farah took another step in his preparation for an eagerly awaited autumn marathon when he won the London 10K on Monday. The Somalia-born Farah, 5 weeks after breaking the British marathon record, showed solid form as thoughts turned to which of the world's top marathons he might contest in October or November. The energetic Andy Edwards watched the multiple Olympic champion in action on the streets of London, and he filed this report.
Farah has been easing his way back into competition, winning over 10K on the road, firstly in Manchester and now in London. His fifth win in the latter event since taking part in its debut event 10 years ago. His winning time of 29 minutes 44 seconds was exactly 2 minutes slower than his course record, set in 2010. But this was not a day for record breaking. Instead, we saw Mo Farah, watched by coach Gary Locke and manager Ricky Sims, do exactly what was required as they make plans for his next marathon appearance. He's been taking stock of his achievement in finishing third in London and contemplating his next major target.
I think the next couple of weeks, maybe even take a little bit more break and just get back, just kind of jogging really, just keep the body ticking, but nothing planned. But in terms of, you know, for me, was most important thing was London. And then, you know, you work down from London, when you've got London Marathon out of the way, why not do a few more races in your hometown?
To perform as he did in the London Marathon in April, contesting top honours with Eliud Kipchoge before finishing third, proved that Mo Farah had truly arrived as a star in the marathon firmament. The man himself had doubts following his debut at the distance in London in 2014.
I think in myself there was a lot of questions about me leading up to 2014, where you've gone through and I'm going to change my training, change a little bit my training and still do the 10K and do the marathon. And it didn't go so well. So when I didn't run as well as I wanted and what I was capable of, thinking what I was capable, it didn't go well. You do question yourself, but obviously, and then come back again here in 2018, having run, you know, that 2:06, breaking British record, that answers everything. Yeah, I am.
You can be sure that any of the elite marathon promoters have been assessing their budgets in terms of making a bid for Mo Farah. As he reflected after his win in the London 10K, he and his management team are weighing up the factors. Do they focus on fast times? In which case, Berlin would be a prime contender. This race has been the stage of world records by Paul Turgat and Haile Gebrselassie. Its elite field tends to be smaller, whereas New York is a more variable, tougher course, with traditionally more strength in depth and a bigger budget to match. Chicago might enter their thoughts as a fast course, but it has lost prestige in recent years and doesn't have the cachet which victory in New York or Berlin would bring. As Mo Farah achieved victory in the London 10K in the shadow of Buckingham Palace, the competition for his services on the autumn marathon circuit was gathering momentum. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Andy Edwards in London.
Thanks, Andy. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. South Africa's two-time Olympic 800 meters champion, Caster Semenya, was one of the big stars at the IAAF Diamond League track and field meet over the weekend in the northwestern U.S. city of Eugene, Oregon. Semenya set a meet record of 1 minute and 55.92 seconds, the fastest 800 meters ever run by a woman on American soil. Speaking after the race, the 27-year-old Semenya said, and I quote, "It was an amazing race. I saw the first lap split was 57 seconds, so I tried to maintain 57 again." Last month, the International Association of Athletics Federations, the IAAF, announced new rules that require hyperandrogynous athletes like Semenya to take medication to lower their testosterone levels beginning in November 2018. Many people think the rule change is designed unfairly and specifically to target Caster Semenya, because it applies only to athletes competing in the 400 meters, 800 meters, and 1500 meters. South African sports officials, as well as others, have criticized the upcoming rule change, and I'm sure we're going to hear more about it, as well as Caster Semenya, in the next few months. More results from that Diamond League meet in Eugene, Oregon. Kenya's Timothy Cheruiyot won the men's mile, clocking 3 minutes and 49.87 seconds. Ethiopia's Samuel Tefera finished second in 3 minutes and 51.26 seconds. Samuel won a gold medal in March over 1,500 meters at the IAAF World Indoor Championships in Birmingham, England. Meanwhile, Kenya picked up another victory in Eugene when Benjamin Keegan was an unlikely winner in the men's 3,000-meter steeplechase race in 8 minutes and 9.07 seconds. Fellow Kenyan Conseslus Kipruto, the reigning Olympic steeplechase champion, edged American Evan Jaeger in a photo finish for second place. Both Kipruto and Jaeger were credited with a time of 8 minutes and 11.71 seconds. Ethiopia's Genzeba Dibaba was dominant in winning the women's 5,000 meters race in Eugene. Genzeba clocked 14 minutes and 26.89 seconds, well clear of Ethiopian countrywoman Leta Senbet Gidi, who finished second in 14 minutes and 30.29 seconds. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Turning to motorsports, Australian driver Will Power has powered his Chevrolet to victory in the Indianapolis 500, described as the Great American Race. Associated Press reporter Tom McCabe tells us more from Indianapolis, Indiana.
Australian Will Power grabbed the lead with four laps to go and won the Indianapolis 500. Pole sitter Ed Carpenter was runner-up a couple of seconds behind Power, and Scott Dixon finished third. Power led 59 of the race's 200 laps on a hot day in Indianapolis.
It's what I needed so badly and what I wanted so badly, and it came true. So, you know, anyone here knows how that would feel if you want something so much and it comes through for you through hard work and determination.
His team owner, Roger Penske, now has a record 17 Indianapolis 500 wins. Power also won the IndyCar Grand Prix at Indianapolis 2 weeks ago. In her final race, Danica Patrick spun out early and finished 30th.
For sure, I'm very grateful for everybody and for being able to, you know, finish it up like I wanted to. It still was a lot of great moments this month, a lot of great moments this year.
Tom McCabe, Indianapolis.
Thanks, Tom. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. And here are a few fun facts about 2018 Indianapolis 500 champion Will Power. Will is 37 years old, and he's the son of Australian open wheel racer Bob Power. Will Power now has 34 victories in IndyCar racing, tying him with American and two-time Indy 500 winner Al Unser Jr. for most on the career list.
They're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
The National Basketball Association playoffs continue later Monday night in Houston, Texas, where the Houston Rockets will host the defending champion Golden State Warriors in the decisive Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals. The Warriors are aiming for their third NBA title in the past 4 years. They're coming off a big 115-86 victory over the Rockets in Game 6 in Oakland, California. The winner of tonight's game will play LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers in the NBA Finals beginning Thursday night. The Cavs got another big performance from LeBron in Game 7 in the Eastern Conference Finals. Associated Press reporter Gethin Coolbaugh has more details for us from Boston, Massachusetts.
LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers are back in the NBA Finals after an 87-79 win over the Boston Celtics in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals Sunday. James had 35 points, 15 rebounds, and 9 assists to reach the finals for the 8th straight season.
It's been a satisfaction on the fact that, you know, I like to be successful, and but more importantly, just the work that I put into it. every single day work ethic that I have.
Jeff Green added 19 points for the Cavs.
We're where we want to be. We're where we set out to be, and we knew we can be at this point. And, you know, we're not satisfied. We're not content with where we're at. I mean, there's two teams that's going to battle, and one of them we're going to face, and we're going to prepare and get ready for them.
Cleveland will face either Houston or Golden State in the finals. Jason Tatum scored 24 points for the Celtics.
I grew up, you know, watching LeBron and, you know, asking him to follow me back on Twitter, going to his camps. So just to, you know, my first year be able to compete against, you know, a player like him and, you know, be a few shots away from, you know, beating him and his team and going to the championship. It's something I'll always remember.
Gethin Coolball, Boston.
Thanks, Gethin. At the post-game news conference in Boston, LeBron James talked about getting back to the NBA Finals once again.
To be honest, I haven't even really kind of processed it. I mean, it's a great atmosphere tonight to be a part of that. You know, be a part of another Game 7, you know, on the road. And, you know, those are things, like I said, when you're done playing a game that you can only dream and wish that you could be a part of that once again. So I haven't really processed the fact that, you know, going back to another finals yet. I know that's where we're headed. I commend my teammates and my coaching staff and everybody that put the work in, you know, even some of our staff that, you know, is not, you know, in the limelight or work behind the scenes. This is a complete team effort.
At that same post-game news conference in Boston, Cleveland's head coach, Tyronn Lue, was asked where he would rate this Game 7 playoff performance by LeBron.
The best. Yeah, I think so. I think, he's had a lot of, you know, gaudy games, but I just think, you know, Game 7 in Boston, all the circumstances that surround Boston, the history behind Boston, playing a team that's very well coached, a good young team that's undefeated in the playoffs at home, and to come on a roll where, you know, all the games have been lopsided, you know, both home teams have, you know, pretty much been in great shape at home, and to come here in a hostile environment, Game 7, Eastern Conference Finals, this and Game 7 of the NBA Finals in 2016, you know, right there.
Meanwhile, Coach Tyronn Lue's coaching counterpart on the Celtics is Brad Stevens.
I mean, every ending is tough, you know, and I guess that's for all 29 teams that don't win it. You know, and no matter how good of a season you've had, the ones that don't end with you winning a championship, just, you know, it's going to be a disappointing ending. But it was a pretty incredible run by an incredible group of guys and, you know, an absolute pleasure and privilege to be around them every day.
Boston Celtics basketball coach Brad Stevens. The NBA will hold its annual awards ceremony on June 25th. And I think that man we just heard from, Brad Stevens of the Celtics, is the favorite to be named Coach of the Year in the NBA. Finally, in tennis, action is underway at the French Open in Paris. Some upsets on Monday. Former champion Stan Wawrinka of Switzerland was knocked out in the first round. He lost to the Spaniard Guillermo Garcia Lopez. Final score from Paris, 6-2, 3-6, 4-6, 7-6, and 6-3. Wawrinka packing his bags from Paris. And on the women's side, two-time Grand Slam champion Victoria Azarenka of Belarus. She crashed out of the French Open in the first round, losing in straight sets 7-5 and 7-5 to Katerina Siniakova. Upsets in the first round at the French Open in Paris. And stay tuned for more updates. And that wraps up the May 28th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer John Dryden. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the Sunny Side of Sports. We'll be right back.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
On the last Monday in May, Americans honor those who have fallen in defense of the country and of its ideals. It is a solemn day, this observance, on which we gather to remember those who have made the ultimate sacrifice for us and to pay them homage. The occasion, originally called Decoration Day, began in Illinois in May 1868, when General John A. Logan of the Grand Army of the Republic, a local organization of Civil War veterans, proclaimed the day as a time for the nation to decorate the graves of the Union war dead with flowers. The purpose of the remembrance, he said, was to cherish tenderly the memory of our heroic dead, who made their breasts a barricade between our country and its foes. The practice spread throughout the country, and in 1966 the name was changed to Memorial Day, and at the same time it became a federal holiday. And so on every Memorial Day, small flags and bouquets of colorful flowers spring up on headstones and memorial plaques in cemeteries all over the country, decorating the graves of military heroes. Every one of these decorations represents a member of the military who died protecting his or her country and what it stands for. They died defending a way of life and values they believed in, and the honor they earned by their sacrifice abides with them forever. It is often said that as long as we are remembered, we remain alive. Thus, on Memorial Day, we recognize the valiant efforts of the hundreds of thousands of men and women who put the country and what it stands for before themselves. They remain with us in spirit, and every Memorial Day we honor and dignify their offering. On every Memorial Day, a grateful nation remembers its heroes and recognizes that lives and blood lost in defense of its freedoms are never given in vain.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
Hello, friends. This is Sunday Shomari, host of Let's Talk. Join me Monday for another exciting edition of your show.
Our topic next week will be volunteering in Africa.
This is Monday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, is it the dawn of a new era in Ethiopian politics? Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed is promising to strengthen democratic reforms and promote unity in the East African nation. Moving forward in Ethiopia, on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African Beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa.
VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast comes to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
We are always glad to have our listeners throughout Africa tuning in to our newscast covering Africa news. Tune in on the top of each hour 24/7. VOA is your trusted source of news and information.